This is Fresh Air. In December 1989, the revolutions sweeping Eastern Europe hit Romania. We all saw the gruesome pictures of the murdered Romanian dictator Nicolae Ceausescu and his wife Elena. But today there are people inside and outside Romania who wonder what has really changed there. Poet Andrei Codrescu is among those who believe that the revolution in Romania wasn't a revolution at all, that it was a staged uprising to get rid of Ceausescu and shuffle the leadership of the Communist Party. Codrescu returned to Romania days after the revolution with several of his colleagues from National Public Radio. He made a second trip to Romania last summer for his 25th high school reunion. It also marked the 25th anniversary of his emigration. He reported on his trips to Romania for All Things Considered and Nightline. These trips are now the subject of his new book, The Hole in the Flag. Listeners to All Things Considered know Codrescu for his skeptical commentaries on American culture as seen through the eyes of an exile. I asked him about the first signs he observed in Romania that indicated the revolution wasn't what it appeared to be.
The reports about the fighting that was going on seemed exaggerated even to the people who were reporting them. In Bucharest, the fighting was going on only at night. Nobody really saw any bodies except when they were being displayed by the newly appointed members of the National Salvation Front. The National Salvation Front, which was the new government, appeared spontaneously on television, or so it seemed to everyone, and yet all the members of the front had links to the old Communist Party and links that went very deep. And we knew all this business. We also knew that certain of the images that we were being fed were not they were disputed. So there was quite a bit of whispering going on about what we were seeing. But we wanted to believe that the year 1989, which had seen the collapse of one red fascist bureaucracy after another, would have this spectacular closure. We managed to convey that impression. Unfortunately, that's not exactly what happened.
Well, one of the things that made you and many other people suspicious was that the Romanian TV never stopped broadcasting during the revolution in December, even though the TV station was allegedly a target of Ceausescu.
Well, the TV station was under attack, and it was broadcasting reports of itself being under attack. It was truly a postmodern moment of this TV revolution, which was conducted entirely on television. It would have seemed very easy for Ceausescu loyalists, if indeed there were any, to knock out the transmission tower or somehow put this single source of news about the revolution out of business, but they didn't. The generals were conducting their field operations or their seeming field operations from telephones in the television studios. And yet, at the same time, there was a spontaneous kind of television being made because people were coming in from the streets to tell their stories, and they were allowed into the TV before the cameras to speak uncensored, and they did so for a long time, and some extraordinary stories were heard in those days. So side by side with spontaneity and then a real revolt, we also saw things that were clearly staged.
Who do you think was behind the staged part of the revolution?
Well, there are three branches to this conspiracy. One was based in Securitate, in the secret police, another in the army, and there were people within the Communist Party as well. And the conspiracy was directed mainly at the Ceausescus. They had attempted once before to get rid of the Ceausescus, but the Soviets, who were keeping a pretty close watch on this, did not give their approval at that time. But in 1989... with all the things going on in Eastern Europe, Ceausescu had become an embarrassment to the Soviets, and I think that the KGB had a big hand in it.
Andrei Codrescu is my guest. I'm sure you know him as a commentator on NPR's All Things Considered. He's also a poet, and he's a Romanian exile, and he returned to Romania right after the revolution, and that's the subject of his new book, The Hole in the Flag. We'll talk more after we take a short break. This is Fresh Air. Andrei Codrescu is my guest, and he's written a new book about his return to Romania, and it's called The Hole in the Flag, a Romanian Exile Story of Return and Revolution. I'm wondering what the experience was like for you as a Romanian and also as a surrealist, to go to Romania right after the revolution, to be swept away by the excitement about it, and then to leave feeling that the whole thing, or at least most of it, was actually staged. I mean, there is something very surrealistic about that.
Well, there is nothing surrealist, if I am that indeed, although I'm not sure. Nothing a surrealist loves more than a revolution, because all the orders of reason and what seemed reasonable are toppled, and new kinds of realities we've never seen before make their appearance. Well, in this case, it was more than I had reason to expect. The cynic in me was certainly asleep for a few moments, but the old Romanian suspicion of things that are too overtly one way or another awoke soon enough. I didn't know that things were as complicated and mysterious as all that until I went back. Actually, in December, I still believed that a fundamental change had taken place, and in fact, it had, but not in the system. It had in the minds of the people. I realized what happened when I went back in June for my so-called high school reunion, which wasn't really a high school reunion. It was mostly a few of my old classmates getting together to compare our senses of humor, I guess. And that's when I realized that my old friends from high school had done very well under the old regime, and they were all solid supporters of the new National Salvation Front, which at that time had shown its true colors by violently suppressing demonstrations by students and intellectuals.
Tell me how, during the course of conversations with your old high school friends, you started to realize that these people represented the regime that was in power.
Well, it was a continuous party. I was there for about a week, and Romanians are very warm people and hospitable, and we ate and drank a lot and did what Romanians do best when they do those things, is talk and argue. The arguments were particularly passionate at that moment, as you can imagine, with everything going on. And, of course, I was arguing for the students and for the intellectuals, because I believe still that they are the only force in the country capable of saving Romania from some horrendous fate. They were arguing the side of law and order and of the government, and essentially spouting the official line, which was that the students were all controlled from abroad, and that once more Jews and Hungarians and gypsies and some other unknown international forces were conspiring to destroy the country, which was, in fact, the same propaganda that Ceausescu himself used before.
Let me ask you, when your friends would say that it was the Hungarians and the Jews who were behind it, blah, 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 would you point out that you were a Jew?
Well, they knew this very well. They were making a kind of deliberate exemption, you know.
Not you, all the other Jews.
Exactly. Of course, this business is very ugly right now of nationalist the hatred of everyone else, and it's reaching truly a horrendous pitch.
What, this new nationalism? Or not so new nationalism?
Well, it's not so new, but the form that it is taking now. One of the, just recently, last month, on May 23rd, a professor at the University of Chicago named Ioan Culianu was assassinated. There are a whole lot of indications that it was a political hit by one of the right-wing Romanian groups that are possibly run by old Securitate people from Romania. And the reason for this assassination, if that's what it was, and a lot of people think that's what it was because he was critical of the new government and of the secret police, and said so in a series of articles. And it's a very tragic thing.
Gee, does that make you worry about your own safety?
Well, yeah, I have some apprehensions. And one of the ways in which I figure, you know, to not just to protect myself, but simply to talk about it and bring it to light as much as possible, because if indeed it is a group of these people, then shining light on them will make them scary the way you put the light on roaches or some horrible thing in the dark.
You and I did an interview before your second trip to Romania, the trip where you went on the high school reunion, and I think your tone has really changed. You just seem a lot more serious now.
Well, yeah, it's darkened a bit. I think much of what all the hopes I had back then were in part my projection and the projection of other people who wanted all the best. But what this past year has done to all of us, actually, is to make us, I think, very circumspect about sentimentality and more aware of the dark forces that are undoubtedly there.
I wonder how you feel that you've been personally changed as a writer by the experience of observing the Romanian Revolution and then observing all the cynicism about it. And I ask that because I know that, for instance, a lot of your commentaries for NPR, even when they're about political issues as opposed to cultural issues, you're usually really writing from a distance and you're finding the humor and the absurdity in events. But this is an event you've been much closer to, and that's just a lot more threatening to you on a personal level because it's your country. And I wonder if you feel changed in a fundamental way by that.
Well, I hope to get back my sense of humor real soon. Because my basic instinct has always been that reality, the way it's constituted, is mostly absurd. And the Romanians all have that sense because you have to have a keen sense of the absurd to survive in a small country at the crossroads of all those big powers in Europe. That's probably my basic view, but I let my guard down for a moment there, and I gave in to the optimism and the hope that that seemed to be everywhere. And then things started to be more like I always thought they were, and now I'm just trying to regain a balance there and find out what the new political jokes are. This is something else, too, that Romanians survived for years by telling political jokes about their leaders, but there is no real new crop of political jokes. I mean, there are political jokes, but they're somehow, they've lost their edge, and probably there is more of a similarity between that and what happened to me. I mean, I'm reflecting in some way the loss of heart to tell jokes.
What effect did it have on you to travel to Romania with journalists from Nightline and from All Things Considered? I think, you know, journalists who are reporting on a story have a different approach than you would because you're looking more for the texture of it, the feel of an event, rather than the facts of it.
Well, we had our problems that way because they were trying to work me in that direction, and I was resisting it the whole time, so I ran away as much as I could. I ended up doing some journalistic things that helped me, and one of them was translate, because there were never enough translators around, and when I was translating, I didn't have time to feel awkward about my old language. I had to do it. Had to be done quick. So in a way, it helped me reintegrate or quickly go back into the pulse of things there. And translation is another extraordinary story that of all these revolutions in 1989 that wasn't yet told. The kind of mistranslations and changes from one perspective to another, and the way the journalists looked at things and the way the translators translated and the actual things that people said. There's some amazingly vast and interesting writer's story in there.
Can you give me an example?
Well, I had a moment when we interviewed the chief architect of Romania, who was the monster in charge of Ceausescu's program of raising peasant villages and building huge new cement monsters. And the man was so loathsome to me that when he was telling us things, he did so in a very mild and well-polished bureaucratic tone, but I ended up putting a lot of my own feelings into the translation, so I made him seem more hateful than he appeared.
Well, how do you feel about having done that?
Great.
Well, I bet the people you translated for didn't feel so great about it. I mean, or wouldn't feel so great about it if they knew that you were exaggerating.
Well, that's why they're journalists and I'm a poet.
Do they know now that...
Yeah, well, they didn't like him either, I don't think, but they wouldn't... They are journalists. And, well, we did a lot around that story, so clearly that particular moment didn't matter all that much.
So is your name blacklisted or not blacklisted now in Romania? Do you know?
Well, no, it's not in the sense that the writers are... I'm going to have two books published there, a book of poetry in the fall, and the essay that we discussed last time on your show, The Disappearance of the Outside. So I'm being reclaimed for Romanian literature in an amazing way. I'm making my reappearance years later in translation. I couldn't translate these things myself because all my American work is my adult work, and I was a child when I left, and I don't have the adult Romanian needed to do that.
Andrei, it was good to talk with you again. Thanks very much.
That was great.
My guest has been Andrei Codrescu. He's a commentator for All Things Considered and the author of a new book called The Hole in the Flag, A Romanian Exile Story of Return and Revolution. This is Fresh Air.